That was weird. As soon as I hit record, like the audio cut out for a second. I thought I was going deaf. Like, I heard nothing. Because I only hear from this right now.
Right.
Hello? Okay. Anyone there? Help. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Not Quite Hollywood, episode 59. I'm Jamie.
I'm Alex. I'm Dan, and it's me again.
Dan returns 9 episodes later. yes, we are here today. Tim is out away going to Cannes Film Festival, Cannes, to debut his short film called Jerky. If you don't know, I like the premise of this. I'm going to say it. It's about a guy who loses his boyfriend or husband. I can't remember if they're married or not. And all that's left as he's trying to grieve is his past lover's dog, Jerky. So it's a pretty cool short. I want to watch it. I still haven't watched it yet.
I haven't either.
We should have got like an inside track. We record podcasts with this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Man, we missed out. Anyway, as always, this is a podcast about movies. We have odd episodes where we discuss movies like we're going to do today. We have Alien Covenant on the line. We have Tai Chi Master.
Mm-hmm.
And our communal film, Alex's Communal, Before Sunrise. But if you wanted to follow us on Twitter, we are there at NQHpod. We are on Facebook at Not Quite Hollywood. And any emails you want to send us our way, we are notquitepod@gmail.com. Speaking of, we're going to try another contest this time. In honor of our communal film, Before Sunrise, what are we going to give away, Alex?
We're going to give away the 3 movies, Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, and Before Midnight on DVD.
Because you had recently got the Criterion Trilogy. Okay, yeah. On Blu-ray. So there you go. Listen to the rest of the episode to find out how to win that. But I say let's start out with our beautiful recent release here. I don't know if you want to call it beautiful. I don't know why I said beautiful.
Well, it's a beautiful looking movie.
It is very nice.
It really is. If there's one thing Ridley Scott can still do is he can make an incredibly good looking movie. And by the way, I totally forgot he had directed The Martian.
Yeah.
He did.
Yeah, he
did.
That
was good. That was actually the last good movie he did, and I really liked it.
The book is really great, so that's why.
I've read the book either. My brother did and loved it.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Ridley Scott, director of Alien Covenant.
Oh, do we have him here? Do we have him?
Yes.
Oh, no, we don't.
I can't do his voice. I'm not going to insult the guy. I can't do a British accent. Alex and I saw a screening of this in January.
And you guys really liked it at the time,
right? Yeah. I mean, we did. I think it was you know, it's hard with the zeitgeist of the time. It's the exclusivity, like, oh, we got to see it like 5 months early, right?
Like,
it wasn't terrible. That's
it wasn't,
thing.
Yeah.
I think we were just going in with very low, we didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
We put the very low expectations. And a lot of people are coming back now saying that they don't like it.
Yeah.
That it's more Prometheus than Alien, or they're trying too hard to replicate Alien with just dumber scientists. I'm like, I get that. There are some pretty dumb moments in there.
Yeah.
Some dumb character decisions, but...
Which I didn't really notice till the second time, but I still, that shower scene is so good. It's my favorite part of the movie.
Sure.
That is kind of cool. My response to it is, like, for actually the first 2/3 of the movie, I was kind of in love with it. It was like, okay, you do have to have watched Prometheus to sort of get, like, everything that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But I liked what they were doing. I liked what they were doing with Michael Fassbender versus Michael Fassbender.
Yeah.
I like the stuff about the planet. I thought the introduction to the movie was a little rushed, but other than that, it was like, oh, this is like an interesting kind of like slow burn of a movie. And I'm actually reasonably compelled by the fact that it was an android that humans made that ultimately made this like perfect organism.
Yeah.
Though in my head, by the way, I still haven't locked it as canon. So Alien and Aliens still exist to me. Like, I don't know, it's a mystery alien ship. So I've been able to separate those things out in my mind, but I really liked it. And then weirdly, as soon as they like get back up to the ship, it was just all the tension was kind of cut. Like there are some really cool things that happen in there, but
yeah,
they didn't handle the falling action really well for me. And I didn't like that when the chest burster comes out of Billy Crudup, that it looks like a tiny version of the alien. I'm like, it should look like a weird
worm,
snake, T-Rex monster thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought the gestation was a little bit too fast. Like,
sure, it was.
Which is my problem with Alien versus Predator, which, I mean, is just a fun garbage movie. But But this was not. This shouldn't have been a fun garbage movie. I don't think it's. I don't hate it, but I'm like, it's like 2/3 of one of the better movies I've seen in a while, and then just kind of left me a little cold.
To be, I guess to defend it, I think that, I mean, they're still making like the alien. David's still making it.
Right.
So I guess the mini one that came out of him is, you know, not.
It's perhaps not as perfected of a thing. But the xenomorph you see that's attacking the ship is pretty much the xenomorph.
Yeah.
You know.
That's pretty much it, yeah.
I was pretty confused with the one in the cave that looked like the person. It was like basically a person with an alien head. You know, the thing that David was like talking to, and then the guy comes up and shoots, and he was like, I had a bond with it.
I actually, weirdly, more than the sequence, the terrible sequence at the Stinger in Prometheus, where it comes out and it's just like, okay, what is this like gross approximation of a monster that I love. I actually kind of liked the weird like white alien things, but just as an understanding of like looking at it and being like, okay, this is actually kind of an interesting monster design that's related to this thing that I like. And I like the weird like the totally like closed face, and then it would open up and the mouth would come out. But it was definitely sort of like, we're gonna get the other one. You've shown us in the trailer that we're gonna get the other one. When's the other one coming?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's funny to me, this is just a side note, as we were talking about it, it made me think of Alien vs. Predator again. That took place in 2004. If that was still canon, which I don't think they're
oh, it was
they're
never ignoring it.
I know. But yeah. That was like, oh, the perfect alien was made, you know, 100 years ago. You know.
But
for the detractors, I like the idea of Prometheus, and then Covenant to an extent was more of like a heady, who created us, like what's our purpose in life? It asks very compelling questions, not necessarily giving the answers to them for the most part. But with Covenant, I thought like you said, it was very cool that what we created our destruction.
Right.
And I don't know where they're going to go. Like, they said they're making two more sequels to tie it to Alien. Like, how much more do we have to know?
Two more?
Yeah, it's a trilogy after Prometheus, they said.
Okay.
So, which I thought was way too much. And yeah. I still think it's
too much. I thought it was one more.
Because it's essentially over. I mean, spoilers for the end. We always talk spoilers in the films, but, you know, when David, we find out David, what's the other guy's name again? The other android? I can't remember his name. Not Michael. It's
Because he was great, too. I think it was, on some level, it was like this, there's this nerd fan moment in the back of my mind where it's just like, oh, this is like Bishop versus, I forget the name of Ian Holmes' character in Alien, but it's just like, it's the good android versus the bad android.
It's Walter.
Walter.
Yeah.
Walter was great. I love that.
But I mean, at the end, you know, you think it's Walter, they go to hypersleep, and then, no, it's David, you know.
David. But I knew it was David the whole time.
Of course you did, yeah.
But the problem is that they handled that wrong. I think we as the audience knowing that it's David is perfectly fine, because that moment where it like stops and you see him reaching for the knife, and it's like, of course it's going to come back and it's going to be David. You've spelled it out for us like very clearly. It needs to have been way more ambiguous.
Is that supposed to be a twist?
I guess so.
See, that's the but the way they should have handled it is the way they should have let it, instead of her figuring out that he's the android, it should have just been she goes to sleep.
Yeah.
Then he walks over and spits out the facehuggers and puts them in the thing. I'm like, that's a much better way to do that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we already sort of know, but that confirms it in a way that's a little bit quieter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's like Ridley Scott forgot how to make his own kind of movie.
Yeah.
I think it might be catering to the audiences nowadays. It's hard to get people to, like we'll talk about Before Sunrise, to get people to a more heady space in film nowadays. It has to be spelled out for everybody.
They'd be dumb.
I guess. I don't know.
In Dark Knight Rises, he's like Robin, and he's like, no, you don't need to say it.
You don't. We got it.
You even call him fucking Dick Grayson or something like that. Done. You don't need to.
Right. But except he wasn't Dick Grayson. He was some dude named Robin.
I know.
Which is the dumbest thing.
Fuck you, Chris Nolan.
I like Christopher Nolan. I have mixed feelings about Interstellar. But,
oh, thank you.
But I
fuck
love...
Fuck you guys.
No. My problem with Interstellar is you could have just cut off the end of that movie and it would have been great, but they didn't.
He goes to find her?
Yeah. It could have just been Matthew McConaughey dies in the fourth dimension, having saved the world. I'm like, that's a better ending. Yeah.
I don't like the whole bookcase thing or whatever it was.
The bookcase thing I'm okay with, but you didn't need to have the daughter being like, it was you the whole time, Dad. And it's like,
Even that is still better than him going to find her. Find her at the end. Because it's completely unrealistic. The fucking wormhole's closed.
She'll
never get to her in time.
There's something beautiful about the decision she made where it's just like, I'm sorry, I'm going to do this at risk that I'm just going to die nowhere in space and time. Alone. Well, and it's like...
Alone without, yeah.
But you get what I mean. It's like, that's actually not a bad way for that character to walk out of the film.
Yeah.
We don't need to know that Anne Hathaway might get saved by Matthew McConaughey.
I think it's kind of cool. She's like almost like a Jane Goodall, like teaching all these human apes to how to live and how to live a life, or just how to interact with them. And like, it'd be interesting to see her as an older lady.
Right.
And not that I want a sequel, but I'm just saying it'd be cool to see that.
I still respect Christopher Nolan. I don't think... But it's just like those two movies, it's just like you had a really good thing going there. I don't know. I'm excited for Dunkirk.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be awesome.
Harry Styles is in it? No, I'm just kidding.
I forget that.
Yeah. My God.
I'm okay with that. I don't know.
It's fine. I mean, yeah.
If he can act, he can act.
1D.
But I don't know. Look, I don't hate Alien Covenant. It's just like, I feel like there was so much good there, and it's just, it was such a good example of slow cinema in a time where that doesn't exist for most of the movie.
Yeah.
And I'm a really big proponent of that. There's this thing that comes up with people talking about older movies saying, it's like, Like they say, like people talking about Star Wars, like the original Star Wars, but it's like, yeah, it's kind of a slower movie. I'm like, no, it isn't. It's got space where it needs space. I have no problem with quick cut movies. I was talking with this about my roommate, where Scott Pilgrim is the example of like, look, that's how you can make a movie that fast and have it work. You have to lay out the entire thing like that. And now you get like Avengers Age of Ultron should have been about half an hour longer. I know that's a lot saying that about a movie that was already like an hour, or no, no, 2 hours, 20, 2 hours, 40, yeah, yeah. or something like that. But like, if that had been a slower movie, it would have been a better movie.
Yeah.
The problem isn't that, it isn't necessarily just tied to people's attention spans. People's attention spans always kind of sucked.
Yeah.
It's that movies that are really good at that kind of like quick cutting, quick paced stuff are unfortunately influencing studio decisions, I think, over the way that movies kind of should be cut and should have more room to breathe.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree. I mean, the first Alien is really slow in the beginning. People forget that because they always think of, you know,
about a good split half, right?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And actually, it's an awesome movie.
I actually like Aliens better than Alien the second time I watched them. Because I felt like Alien was... I felt like the thing at the end looked really bad where the alien, like, she puts it out of the ship, you know, and it's out in space.
Right.
It looked like a guy in a suit.
It's special effects at the time.
79, dude. Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty good for 79.
Yeah.
I like the look of that shot. I do agree it does definitely look like like the guy in the suit.
Yeah.
Considering it's the first time you see it in a wide shot.
Yeah.
But
I just feel like the character had so much more depth than Aliens, and it was so much more fascinating.
They had more time.
All
the characters in Alien are good, but Ripley is the one character that's still alive at the end of the movie. Just through circumstance. Though I do like the kind of way that they, she's the one who's actually, like, really taking her job seriously through a lot of the movie.
Yeah.
Which is why it's interesting at the end that she's the only one who's still alive.
Mm-hmm.
She said not to bring it on. I'm not letting you in.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm realizing it's like, oh yeah, that is a direct lead into Covenant with I forget the character's name. I don't remember any of the characters' names.
That's not good. Tennessee,
yeah, of course.
I love the scene they released, The Last Supper, beforehand, where you know him and Franco between takes are just dicking around. I'm like,
oh yeah,
oh my god, it's just it's a cool
I haven't movie. Seen those.
Oh really?
Because it's funny how small of a role Franco has in the final product.
Right.
He just essentially flashback picture. Yeah.
You see him burn to death.
Here's the other thing. I guess we should talk about what was different. In the test screening, they didn't have that scene where David was imagining the people running and the aliens falling on them and all that.
That wasn't in it at all.
No.
Oh, okay, interesting.
Yeah.
So, I enjoyed, not that I enjoyed a sequence watching people be like mass murdered.
Yeah.
But it was, I thought that was actually kind of a cool sequence. That was the one kind of throwback to Prometheus where I was like, okay, like I'm good with that.
I was just like, this is new. But I was totally expecting a different ending because I guess I kind of messed up. I told the theater people what I saw, and they were like, oh, no, it's different, and then it wasn't different.
Oh.
But I was, like, totally expecting, you know, something completely different, like in Get Out or something. But so I was kind of disappointed in that sense. But, you know, it's good. It's not like...
It's a 75. It's yeah. Like, the beginning of that movie, I really actually loved. I was, like, mm-hmm. fully into it. Pretty much the only thing until they get to their main spaceship that kind of bugged me was the chestburster sequence. And Billy Crudup's character would have had to have been a little bit smarter than that.
I know.
A little bit. I was bit. Like,
let's dude. Lean into the fucking... Yeah, they show it in the trailer, too. It ruins the entire scene. Like, why are they so dumb? Like, I wouldn't even land. Like, I got, like, how many? 4,000 people on this ship? Don't fuck with their lives.
Right.
Go to your destination, people.
I think it was 2,000, but yes.
Whatever. Point is, it was a lot of people they just fucked over because of this.
They should have waded through the storm.
Yeah.
100%.
Yep.
Just putting thousands of people's lives at risk.
But then it could last days or weeks.
It could last days or weeks or months, but I think they would have been able to have probably handled David pretty well, maybe.
Yeah.
Them as a group.
Yeah.
Just throwing that out there. Mm-hmm. I mean, they made some bad decisions early on.
But... A lot of them. In rapid succession. Yeah, so I don't know. I'm excited to see what they try to do with the next couple, but I don't know. You know, the Alien 5 was supposed to happen. That was supposed to pick up after 2. Aliens, it was ignored.
They canned it.
Yeah, Neil. Sucks. Yeah, I know. Because Neil Blomkamp could have done a pretty good job with that.
And I heard Sigourney Weaver wanted to do it.
Yeah.
A lot of people were on board with it, and that's why it's more upsetting to me that it's not happening, because it's like, why keep tacking on to Alien, a movie that's so singular in an interesting way? And Aliens, which, yes, it's a sequel, but also has its own vibe that I think is more... There's almost more you can do with Aliens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is why a lot of the comics, the books, all that stuff, they're based off of Aliens and what's going on in that and the kind of world that exists there than going back to the Nostromo and Alien. And
do they even stuff say, like that. I don't even think they say Xenomorph in Alien.
No.
It's Aliens.
Well, they never say... I don't know if they even say Alien, but... But it's just the one thing on the ship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in Aliens, like, they totally say...
They say Xenomorph, and then... Because they're just like, we don't have a name for it. We don't know if this thing exists. Xenomorph.
Yeah.
It's a bug hunt.
It's funny to me, and I hope this is not true, but it's almost as if he doesn't want to deal with the aliens because it wasn't his thing.
Because...
Well, Ridley. Because Ridley would have produced the fifth one with Blomkamp directing, and then... It would have followed Aliens, not his.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know if there's any bad blood. I don't think there's any bad blood between Cameron and Scott, but...
I don't think there is.
I was just thinking, Ridley Scott's probably like, well, I'm making my Alien stuff and there can't be another one, so... Like, no. Like, stop.
I don't understand what they're going to do with two more movies.
Yeah. It's crazy.
I'm open.
I mean, they're not even on the planet yet. They haven't even found that
right.
Planet.
Sure, they haven't explained how it crashes to the surface and why the thing burst out of the space jockey's chest. And like I said, in my head, I've still separated it out. It's still a mystery ship. Those things are their own thing.
And are they going to answer the questions? Like, honestly,
no.
Like, what's his name? Who helped write Prometheus? Who wrote Lost? Who?
Damon Lindelof.
Oh my God.
Maybe that should.
You never answer the questions of anything. Like. That and The Leftovers, all this like philosophical stuff, and like he never answers any questions.
But
like,
this wasn't his role to do so. Didn't he write this one, did he?
I don't know.
But he set up all those questions in Prometheus and then he left it.
That's not his fault if this film didn't address half of them.
I guess.
I mean, what's the next step to me? So either you go have a fucking alien feast on the ship and all these people die, or do they try to meet that creator? I mean, obviously, David has met one of them in Prometheus, and what didn't turn out so well.
And then he went to a planet of them and massacred all of them.
Well, that's what happened.
Is that what happened?
Yeah.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah. It was.
They did
it
go
was
to that planet.
He finally met gods and then used them to
that's
make
right.
a thing.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Of course. That's
so
right.
So they kind of do answer like some of the questions, but they do it in a way that's just like, hey, remember that movie? And then just like kind of, they just kind of like, let's gloss over it by just like killing the entire like.
Was
alien
that
race.
Yeah.
Was that that planet that they were on, that's where they used to live?
I'm assuming so. That I'm assuming either that was a home world or just another colonized planet. See, that's the thing.
There I thought it was a different planet.
There might be.
Because if that was their home, I guess it could have been, though, because that opening scene
with Prometheus. Could go either way. They were clearly colonizers.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
that's something you should have put in one of the movies. He's making two more. Like, come on.
We'll see if we'll get there eventually.
What are they going to do? The last movie before Alien, they're going to have like a CGI Sigourney Weaver like fucking Leia in Rogue One? Come on.
Yeah.
Or Tarkin.
Tarkin.
Yeah.
The thing is, he spells out those other things we were talking about earlier. You know, he spells them out so obviously. And then this thing, you kind of just like, oh, it's okay. You just don't need to.
You
don't need to know.
It's almost like he's trying to like take this like mistake and just sweep it behind him. Hey, look, I killed the thing you hated. Look, there's a whole scene where I massacre all of them.
All right, so speaking of killers, we should move on.
Yeah, a little bit, probably.
So the Tai Chi Master.
Tai Chi Master is a, I think it's from 1992 or 93, is a Hong Kong Jet Li movie. I think directed by Yuen Woping, he's famous here for a lot of his like fight choreography as opposed to any of the movies he directed. But he did the choreography for Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. He did the choreography for The Matrix. So he's done a lot of martial arts combat stuff. But The Tai Chi Master is a Hong Kong movie that's just... You know when the pacing of something is so out of control that it's compelling? Like, everything in the movie is kind of amped up to an 8, but none of it feels, like, unnatural. It's, like, kind of riveting. Like, everyone's overacting. The violence is, like... really, there's this certain like sense of violence in Hong Kong movies where it's like it's really violent, but it's like really like theatrical. Like, you know, like in a John Woo movie, a dude gets shot like 50 times and then blood, and, you know, like all everywhere. But it's not gory per se. It's just lots of blood. In this movie, there's lots of people who get like stabbed and like throats cut, and it's just like, oh, there's a lot of blood on their teeth. Look at that. So it's just. It's cartoonishly violent, really over the top, a lot of really awesome, the kind of like fight choreography where it's like everyone's kind of like flying and stuff like that.
Like Crouching Tiger.
Right.
I haven't seen that either. It's on my mission.
Crouching Tiger is so good. It should be on Hulu right now, I think. Beautiful movie. Really, really good. But in that one, he uses the fight choreography to make it kind of more like beautiful and flowing and poetic. In Tai Chi Master, it's just, like, really insane. There's a...
Oh, it's the same director?
Yeah, it's not the same director, but Yuen Woping, who directed Tai Chi Master, did the stunt choreography for Crouching Tiger. He did it for Crouching Tiger, The Matrix, and I know a few more movies that... Well, there's Cradle to the Grave, but that's not a good movie or one that...
Come on, that's the best movie ever made.
But, he's worked with Jet Li a lot, actually. It's just this really, really intense, over-the-top fight choreography. There's a scene in a Shaolin temple where, like, the idea is that it's Jet Li and his friend, like, grew up in the Shaolin temple together, but his friend's, like, a troublemaker, and Jet Li's the one who's always, like, really, really nice. And they eventually get kicked out. Jet Li sort of becomes, like, a resistance fighter against the corrupt state. And his buddy becomes, like, the most, like, horrifying general ever.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you know, forces his soldiers to, like, abuse themselves in order to become tough and stuff like that. There's a lot of scenes where he's, like, ordering people to, like, throw themselves, like, to the ground and, like, roll down hills and, like,
that's great.
Cough up blood and stuff. But there's a fight sequence when they get kicked out of the Shaolin Temple where it's just, like, dudes, like, flying onto each other's shoulders, throwing, like, wooden poles at them. And it's just, that's the entire scene is just this, like, intense, like, quick cut mishmash, all like wide angle lenses too close and then kind of far, and like they're just getting hit by like wooden poles all the time, and just like I said, lots of like flying intense stunt choreography, and I love that kind of thing. I watched it when I was in middle school because my brother had the tape, and it was the first time I had seen something like that where it was just made with such abandon to like. Like, I'm sure the performances are good. It is a good movie, but it's hard to explain, like, if someone had tried to make this movie in America, it would have ended up bad. And it makes me realize things about, like, there is something about, like, concepts of international cinema where, like, sometimes when you see, like, American movies try to get replicated in other countries, it doesn't work because there's sort of, like, cultural attitudes that kind of shape the kinds of art that people create. But it's a really, really fun movie. It's on Netflix right now. I really recommend people see it if you just want to, like, see, like, a balls-out kind of, like, simultaneously, like comedic and dramatic and over-the-top and violent martial arts movie. There's, like, a really great extended sequence where Jet Li, being very funny, which I don't know if people think of him as being, like, a funny actor, but it's like he has this mental breakdown after his friend betrays him. And it's just him talking to chickens and, like, trying to, there's this great sequence where someone's trying to give him water because he's trying to drink the muddy water that's on the ground. And he's, like, trying to drink it. And it's like, no, don't do that. Here's this clean bowl. And he's like, oh, he grabs the clean bowl, washes his hands, then puts his hand back in the dirty water and keeps trying to drink it. It's good. It's really fun. It's, who else is in it? I think Michelle Yeoh's in it, too.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, so that's it's an awesome movie. I don't know if you guys are.
I mean, it's hard when we haven't seen it not to talk about it, but I always make a joke. It's like a book report when you have to talk about it to the people who haven't seen it.
Fair enough. But are you guys have you watched a lot of like Hong Kong kind of martial arts movies or?
I've seen The Raid.
The Raid. I've actually never seen.
Wow.
I haven't seen The Raid. I haven't really seen The Raid 2. I only recently watched Ip Man and Ip Man 2.
Okay.
And those were a lot of fun. Perhaps because more people here, I'm guessing, have seen Ip Man. I've seen
very few of these kinds of films, honestly.
Have you seen The Raid?
Yeah, I've seen the first Raid.
Okay.
It's a much more kind of real blow by blow. Yeah. It's Indonesia, right?
Yeah. I don't know.
I think so.
Yeah. No, I'm trying to get back
in Modesty Video.
Yeah.
Yeah. He keeps trying to make Odyssey Video a sponsor. Get all your free adult movies.
Dollar rentals Sunday, Tuesday, and Thursday.
That might not be a bad plan.
Yeah.
Today's Sunday. Today's Monday.
I was gonna say
it's Monday morning. All my days are gone now because this job.
So that is my book report on The Tai Chi Master. Please watch it.
That's awesome.
On Netflix. It's very good.
Check it out. So,
speaking of stunts, Before Sunrise.
Well, it's not a segue at all.
So much stunt work.
I can't believe
that movie.
Ethan Hawke did his own stunts.
I love the scene where Ethan Hawke flies.
When he stands up that one time. Oh my God. I thought he was going to fall off his ass.
Oof. So, Before Sunrise is about Jesse and Celine who meet on a train in Vienna. And he asks her to get off the train with him because it's his only day in Vienna. She gets off, and it's basically them walking and talking for the whole movie and developing a relationship. And it's like nonstop conversation, but it's not awkward. It's just flowing. And I was telling Jamie last night, like, it's pretty rare to meet those people that you can just talk to, just, you know, have constant flow conversation. And even when it is silent, to have it not be awkward. And so it was such a cool movie to see that. And man, all those pages and pages of dialogue they had to memorize, it's like amazing.
That must have been rough. Probably a little bit rougher in Before Sunset, but then again, that movie they wrote together at least. But,
yeah. The last two they all wrote together.
Yeah. I like movies like that. I like movies that are like really dialogue heavy where the dialogue feels kind of like right and it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
You feel Julia Delpy and Ethan Hawke actually kind of like living in those characters. Their first meeting does feel kind of natural enough. And like you do believe that these people would just keep kind of spending a day that.
No, so I haven't seen the last two. So
right.
Okay.
No.
I just want to make sure.
We're just talking about the first one.
I know.
I'm not going to.
I like the dialogue because it feels as though. I can't remember the co-writer's name. Her name's Wendy something for the first one. And it feels as though it's their musings about life.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just vocalized through these surrogates, these characters that they've written. And there's some really like thought-provoking musings. I mean, so like when Ethan Hawke's mentioning like, oh, you know, we each have our own soul, but how many souls were out there to begin with? And like we're only a fraction. That's why we're kind of like so wandering and disparate. We're not really these whole beings, and that's why, because our souls are only a portion of what they used to be or something like that. Just random things about like life and death, and like when Ethan Hawke said, oh, my friend had a son recently, and all I could think of looking at this first moment of this boy's life is his death. because it's almost like, you know, everything's so finite, and yet, you know, it's always, it always ties it back so well into their meeting. This day is all they have in this movie.
It's all about time.
Yeah.
And that's super cool because each movie is like, you know, it's years in between, and each one is the real time of how long it took to like get to that point in their lives. So that's all really cool because they keep going back to like the idea of, oh, we only have this day and this amount of time to be together. This is also one of the only movies I've ever like wanted to buy the script in like book form for.
Mm. Oh yeah.
Well, it's a good case study in how to construct like long form dialogue over the course of an entire movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like this and these three movies, but this and like My Dinner with Andre, but
oh yeah.
I mean my Dinner with Andre is an odd case, and I think it's just those two actors having the relationship let them develop that. But in the case of this, that they were able to sort of make it that they were also like kind of traveling and like doing stuff, but it's still like a forward momentum kind of a thing.
It's still two people essentially in a play sitting on chairs. It's just in different settings.
Fair enough.
Mm-hmm. But that's not a problem.
Right, right.
To me, it's really interesting how it captivates you in a way that most films, even with all these fancy special effects and quick cuts, don't. There's something to these characters where their relationship together, you get lost in it. It's almost a proxy for you to come into this, like, and then hear their experiences with relationships before and how they tease the truth but sometimes don't reveal it until later. One of my favorite, there's two favorite scenes. One Alex mentioned to me, did that scene just come on? Yes, it did. In the record store where they're listening to records, like, oh, you just want to see the listening booth still works? And so they keep missing each other's glances. Like, they look down as the other person looks at them and vice versa.
And there's no dialogue in that scene.
No, it's great. It's just that music playing in the background.
Yeah.
And it's such a powerful scene because that alone is just, there's so much that they want to say to each other. They want to like reach in and kiss, because at this point they hadn't kissed yet. It's like right after this they do. But it's just funny how they say so much without saying anything. Then my other favorite scene is that they're at a diner and it opens while these other German couples are really partners of people talking to each other. And then there's one American couple in there and it cuts to them. And like, I'm going to call my friend who I'm supposed to have lunch with in 8 hours and tell her I can't make it. So they mock this conversation with her friend, and he plays the friend, and it's like jokingly like, oh, can we try? I'm trying English. Can we try to speak English for the heck of it? And she's like, sure, why not? And in that moment, they're telling the truth to each other through this proxy of this phone call. And then when Julie Delpy is talking and she gets this her pinky in her mouth and like the corner of her lip, that alone says more than the conversation. Like later she confesses, oh yeah, I thought about sleeping with you. Oh, when we first talked on the train, like when I got off the train with you, I was like, I'm gonna sleep with you. And then like this, you could tell there was something there because of the way they were acting.
It's right.
So subtle, yet it's very human in nature that you can pick up on those vibes just by seeing them. And body language is everything, and this film is the master of body language.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking about this as you were bringing up that scene, that how scary the casting process had to have been. They really, really had to get the right actors. And I think about, like, that's a scary thing I have to think about, like, at some point, I mean, you know, we're all in the business of making movies. Like, that's... I mean, I'm sure there was a lot of hard work that went into getting the right people in the right place, but it's like, that's still a stroke of luck that you get two actors who fit into these roles and develop that chemistry with each other in a way that feels really natural, and develop that chemistry so much that the two actors are responsible for one of the sequels.
Yeah.
You know,
imagine Boyhood.
Well, at least the first one. Richard Linklater, I think, actually went back in and worked on. I think he's more responsible for the third one. I could be.
I haven't seen the next two, but based on the credits in the book that he had in his collection,
they all wrote the
last two.
Yeah, or Boyhood too. Like, I mean, he had to cast those people like years before and be like, I hope this kid turns out to be something good. Or you know, like imagine like. Like somebody dies halfway through or something, and it's like, oh, like that casting process must have been.
No, that's scary. Really, it's beautiful when it works out like that, though.
Yeah,
but to me, Boyhood's a fucking joke compared to Before Sunrise.
Wait, so you like Before Sunrise, but you don't like Boyhood?
Boyhood is more. It's the artifice of the time you know, and part of it's the fact that I saw him talk about the process. Like every year I'd come back and write some more. It felt very listless, very, it lacked a focus that Before Sunrise had.
Huh.
And I haven't seen, again, I haven't seen the next two Before films, but when you come back to a film and you've written the whole thing, it's different compared to writing another year in this kid's life.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the charm of boyhood is the fact that you do see how this kid grows, and not everybody's story is the same. Not everybody's story is predictable, and that's cool. I like that.
Not every year is as strong.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Just like
100% just real life.
Like my year, just
which year is the worst for you, Dan?
Yeah.
Let's talk about it. Some bad years for me: 2005, 2007.
Yeah.
No, the point is. Not 2005 is pretty good. 2007 is bad.
2013.
Right now.
Okay. this right now? Yeah, 2017. Fuck that. But, you know, so I think that Before Sunrise had a better focus. And the characters were, for example, Boyhood. The parents were more interesting to me because of
the relationship to watching the kid grow up.
And I guess this is part of it. I mean, you know that his daughter was not a big fan of this movie. She wanted to leave halfway through. And
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
She went to college.
Yeah, and the kids just don't feel as much of... It just felt as though... I don't know. Before I ramble any further, Before Sunrise just felt more coherent to me and more complete. So that's all.
Mm-hmm.
Loving Boyhood, I kind of agree with that. I think that... And you're going to see through the next couple that really does... What you see carries into the next two in a way that's painfully realistic.
Okay.
And I love that.
Only seen the last one once, but I've seen the other first two three times or something.
The last one's really great. I want to say stuff about it, but we shouldn't now.
Oh, yeah, I know. I know.
It's and good.
You want to watch the whole series before we spoil the whole thing when Jamie watches it all. email us at notquitehollywoodnotquitepod@gmail.com. And you can win the entire trilogy on DVD.
What do they have to do to win? Email us?
Yeah.
No. Well, yeah, let's do that. If you want to suggest a topic or movie to discuss, fine. But we're going to go from...
Email us a coherent sentence so we know what you're saying.
So the cutoff date is May 31st. June 1st, we'll announce the winner on the podcast. If there's anyone who responds, because last time we tried to give me some shit away, La La Land digital copy, no one even emailed. One more thing about Before, one of the most poignant moments of the film is the end where, not before they greet each other off, but when they show all of the locations they were at during the day, where no one's in there. And to me, that was the most powerful thing, because there was a quote earlier in the film that I liked, that I thought of when this happened. It was, so as Jesse's talking to Celine, I know what you mean, though, about wishing somebody wasn't there. It's just usually myself that I wish I could get away from. Seriously, think about this. I've never been anywhere that I haven't been. I've never had a kiss that I wasn't one of the kissers. You know, I've never gone to the movies when I wasn't in there in the audience. I've never been out bowling if I wasn't there, you know, and making some stupid jokes. Mm-hmm. And I just thought about that as they showed this. And then they also said how magical the evening was. And when you see these moments in the daytime, like on top of this roof, in this cafe restaurant on the boat, on this balcony, in this bridge, in the park. It's all very lifeless, and that moment has faded. And then they cut to them in the daytime, like, oh no, it's real time now, isn't it? And it's just, oh God, it's so fucking good. Like, that was a perfect choice. I can't, there's no one in the world who could have told him to do that. It's probably just almost an impulse. We should come back here and film. It just felt... Whether or not it was intentional during the script process, that was the most powerful thing for me in that film.
Hmm. This is another reason why I like getting people to watch, especially this movie, because I feel like there's so many layers to it and so many people like read certain things into it. I would have never thought of that. So that's really cool. It's
just so fucking nice. I love it. I don't know.
Okay, the book that they're reading at the beginning, that's Story of the Eye, right? The one that starts the conversation, because it's a Bataille thing. So Georges Bataille.
They were each reading a different book.
They were each reading a different book, but he mentions to her, or does she... I can't... It's actually been like a couple of years since I've seen the movie, so I'm trying to remember, because if it's the book I'm thinking of, I have that book, and it's a really fucked up book. Georges Bataille, mm-hmm. Madame... Oh, so it's a collection of stuff. Okay, so it's not... I don't think it's story. A lot of his stuff is about like sex and death and like
who's death, reading it? History Hawk? Of
she's
yeah reading. She was reading. He yeah. was reading an autobiography. All I Need Is Love from Kinski.
Okay.
Oh, okay. This is the somebody's post about it. Celine's book is fiction. Jesse's book is an autobiography. Both books are extremely erotic.
Okay. So it's interesting. It's two people reading dirty books on a train. Yeah. Artsy dirty books, perhaps.
It was like it was destined to happen. I mean, they were destined to hook up. And, you know, I like how they just will they, won't they in the park scene. It's just, oh, I shouldn't because I'll think about who you're sleeping with and I'll miss you. And she's like, at the end, she's like, well, you know, I thought about it after we got off the train.
And it's ironic because this isn't spoiling anything.
Spoilers.
The second, well, I guess it is kind of, but it's not really.
How vague.
The second one starts out the conversation about a book too.
That's true. And so. And that's actually a great through theme is that
I don't know if the third one does, I can't remember.
Yeah, well the literature is a subject. Mm. So you have here's a fascinating thing, three movies about romance and literature. Mm-hmm. Essentially, on some level, where those are the concurrent themes. And hard sell for the wrong person, but...
And yeah. The Spiderwick Chronicles couldn't get a sequel. What the fuck? They made a trilogy about this stuff? It's fucking stupid.
But yeah, email us, please.
Yeah. Come on. What is this? Some bullshit?
So if you can tell by the obvious dip in quality, I'm recording by myself again. This week's 52 pickup is... unfortunately tied to Alien Covenant. It is the last Alien titled Alien Resurrection. Alex and I watched it, and I gotta say, I was really disappointed for some things. It was better than I remembered, and I mean that in the best of ways, because it was kind of dumb, cheesy fun. Like, Ron Perlman's hamming it up, Dan Hedaya and his fucking great eyebrows. I mean, you got Winona Ryder, who was the reveal of her being an android Alex did not get. And I was kind of surprised. They really heavily, you know, hinted towards that. The alien design actually was pretty cool. Not, of course, the stupid fucking hybrid that comes out of Ripley. Or rather, the Queen. That thing that looks fucking disgusting. It's funny that Joss Whedon wrote it, because there's definitely elements of Joss Whedon that come through. And he had been doing stuff for a while. You know, he had a draft on Toy Story. He'd been working on Roseanne for a long time. He wrote Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the movie, and you know, was working towards his goal. I think Buffy had already come out at this point, the show. So he was doing pretty good. It's okay. It's fun sometimes. Some of the camera tricks are really cool. Some of the visual set design is pretty cool. But for the most part, no, it's not that good. It's barely registers on the dumb fun scale. So if you want to rewatch them, Alex had rewatched all of them for the Alien Covenant premiere, and this was the last one you had to watch, so skip it if you need to, because it's not worth it.
Well, that's our show today. Thank you for joining us, Dan.
No problem.
Always a pleasure. Where can people find you or follow you online?
So 44 Minutes is the podcast I do with Kevin Prof. It's worth looking up if you're interested in just learning about kind of odds and ends, bits and pieces of like vinyl record history and stuff like that, which we will have a new episode coming out soon about this like really weird Star Wars record I found, which nice. I'm very actually excited.
That's
to
very cool.
Kind of play for people. But yeah, other than that, I have an Instagram account, seduction_hour on Instagram. So you can find me there if you want to see me take pictures of my Blu-ray collection and my neighborhood. that is what I do with my Instagram account.
All right. That's awesome. And you can follow me on @meandmyblazer on Instagram if you want to see me take pictures of my neighborhood. And my blog is Doggone Movie Reviews.
Oh, I mean, if you wanted to follow me on Instagram, I'm at Guy on a Wire. I'm also that on this website, guyonawire.com, where this post, if you wanted to catch all of our episodes in the backlog, you can do so there. I also write a weekly series. I've got to finish a chapter today for My Cancer Story, where I talk about my cancer story. Very great title. It's a tentative title, but point is, it's fun. Not fun. It's good to read.
I've been reading it cool. As you've been updating it.
Okay.
I need to get to the backlog of it, but yeah. I've been enjoying it.
Yeah, it starts out really strong, and I realize it's kind of just... It's right... It is a first draft, so, I mean,
yeah.
You kind of have this I have to lay everything on the table in order, then kind of see what's more important. Kind of, it might be truncated, but honestly, some parts will be extended because they were more important. I kind of glossed over them to make the deadline, which is a rush, but it's a pain in the ass. Anyway, also subscribe to us on iTunes. We love some 5-star reviews if you have them. If you don't even fucking bother. No, I mean, you have to be honest. I would also like to have criticism. Yeah, but I would also like to have constructive criticism in the review if you're gonna review. But I just want to get some more eyes or ears into this podcast. So
give us some ideas.
Yeah, suggestions for topics or movies. We'd love to do that. A little more interactivity. We're gonna do some more interactive topics coming up soon. I love doing the game, so that might come up next episode. We'll see. And of course, Twitter, NQH Pod, Facebook's Not Quite Hollywood, and email us like you want to win that trilogy, the Before trilogy.
And subscribe on iTunes.
I already talked about it. We just, a moment ago, Derek.
Derek
Zoolander has a joke. Oh. But why male models? What? You always do this.
If you want to win the trilogy.
Nope, that was already done. You really don't pay attention.
Internet?
Yeah, I should say the email. notquitepod@gmail.com. Until next time, I'm Jamie.
I'm Alex.
I'm Dan. I'm probably not going to be here next time, but you might hear me.
Oh, thanks for coming. And goodbye.
Bye.
Tim's